Thank you, John. Like John said, my name is Barry Goodrich, and I'm with Trinity Consultants. I'm just going to give you a quick overview of what Trinity Consultants is and where we came from and why we're coming into this work, and actually we're continuing to do this kind of work as we've done in the past. In 1974, started as one office in Dallas specializing in just air quality. Now we're up to 27 offices nationwide, and we offer environmental solutions to a whole range of businesses. We focus on air regulatory compliance, but we offer different environmental management software as well. As you can see, we've got offices nationwide throughout the entire Cotton Belt, and we service industries in cotton, several different ag industries, and basically a whole range of industries in, as far as air permitting issues. We also have recently expanded an office in China. What I'm here to talk about today is basically what are some permitting issues that occur with cotton byproduct manufacturing facilities, specifically oil mills, and what happens when you take these facilities and say, with the recent alternative fuels boom, add in a biodiesel plant because you have this oil and you think, hey, this would be a great byproduct that I could do with some extra oil if I have it. In that, I'm going to talk about basically what is the permitting requirements if you just have an oil mill, what are the permitting requirements if you just have a standalone biodiesel plant, and then what happens if you combine these facilities as far as your air permitting requirements. First off, at an oil mill, you have your typical permitted sources that are going to be in your permit, your boilers, your material handling and processing facilities, which will typically involve your hauling and separating, your materials receiving, which are your fugitive sources, your material loadout. You've got your storage houses and cooling fans, which they might be in some permits, but not necessarily all of them. Then you have your oil extraction unit, which is where you have your emissions of your HAP and what really causes you to be a major source a lot of times. And these emissions are what really start getting you in trouble when you start combining it with a biodiesel plant. For your seed houses and cooling fans, these won't always be in your permits. In Texas specifically, they do not require you to have your cooling fans in your permit. They don't have to be a listed source. However, if at some point you did introduce them into your permit, the TCEQ will not allow you to take them out. They don't like to see sources disappear from permits that still may be there. If they are in your permit and you modify any of them, you've got to update your permitting agency on that. That's something that we've run into with a few different facilities, is they've made some changes on site and not always updated their permit in a timely fashion. That's caused some problems. Once again, if you make these changes, you really need to get the permit ahead of time, and it's more cost effective that way in the long run. Some things that may get you in trouble is moving the location of a source. If you have a loadout facility that you decide you want to move across your to a different location on your property, you need to have that permitted. If you have an installation of a new boiler, even if it's replacing an existing boiler, unless it's an identical replacement, you're going to have to go through the permitting process with that. Once again, if you're replacing cooling fans, unless they're the same fan, you've got to go through the permitting process just to let them know it. Some ways that you can go through that permitting process for updating your permit is a simple permit by rule. That's usually your quickest, most effective, and cheapest way to do it. Most minor changes you can do through that. If you've got a much larger change, you may have to go through a full permit amendment. That's more involved, involves looking at more of your entire facility. A lot of times that'll bring in a more intensive review, so you'd rather do it by permit by rule. Another thing to remember is that when you update your NSR permit, if you are a major source, you'll have to go through and update your Title V permit. Now, when you're doing these updates and changes, one thing to remember and why you want to do it by PBR, if you have several little changes throughout the time period that you have your permit, is because if a single project increases your emissions by these limits down, you see down at the bottom here, there it is, down here at the bottom, if a single project increases emissions by any more of those thresholds, what that does is brings in a PSD review, which is prevention of significant deterioration for air quality, and they will come through and look at your entire facility, and they may require abatement devices to be put on things that you're not even changing at that point. If you wait and do all your permit amendments at one time, after you've done a lot of projects, your permitting agency will oftentimes look at those, even though you may have done them over 5 years, as a single act, a single update. And if you trip that 15 tons per year, you're introducing a lot of review and a lot of problems in the long run that will really increase the cost of your permit. Additionally, if you do a permit amendment instead of a permit by rule, your permit fee is based on the capital cost of your changes. So if you take all those changes together, your permit fee goes up pretty drastically when you do that amendment. So basically, the first take home of this talk is to get your permitting done as you make these changes and don't wait to do them all at once. There's one exception to a major modification rule for that 15 tons. This is EPA's been going back and forth on this for almost 30 years now. Just in December, they announced that unless you're on what's called the list of, I think, 28, which is your major air pollution sources like coal cleaning plants, craft pulp mills, and primary lead smelters, fugitive emission increases do not trigger your PSD permitting. That can be a big thing for oil mills on their receiving operations, or if they want to add some loadout operations of whole seed prior to processing. Going back to other sources that are going to be in your permit, your oil extraction unit is typically one of your larger sources in your permit, and it's something that they tend to focus on a little more than your other sources. Typically, you'll use in solvent extraction hexane as a solvent. You have two choices on hexane. You'll typically get permitted for both so that you can go back and forth on whichever is cheaper. But the problem with that is when you use N-hexane, that's a HAP. If you have the potential to emit more than 10 tons per year of this hexane, you become what's called a major source of HAPs. What that does is that trips you into a whole other set of regulations known as the MAC standards, which is maximum achievable control technology. And specifically for vegetable oil plants, it's this standard. It's quadruple G of 40 CFR part 63. What this does is it limits your emissions of hexane to the numbers listed below. And basically for existing major sources, 5,100 tons of seed a year would make you a major source. If you're a new seed crushing plant, 8,900 tons, because you'd be limited to a lower level. These are relatively small sizes for these facilities. So basically everybody is gonna be a major source in this matter. What does this MAC do? Well, basically it's there to capture permitting requirements for major sources of hazardous air pollutants. Once again, if you have the potential to emit at 10 tons of any single HAP, in this case hexane, you're a major source, or 25 tons of all your HAPs together. Like I said, this gives stringent HAP emission limitations. It drastically lowers the amount of emissions you can have. And then it also adds several layers of other requirements, such as monitoring, record keeping, reporting, possibly performance testing, depending on which one you're at. And you also are required to develop and keep online plans for startup, shutdown, and malfunction, operation, maintenance, and compliance demonstration, maybe, and possibly monitoring, depending on which HAPs you're a major source for. Like I said, for a vegetable oil MAC, the potential to emit 10 tons per year. So if you ever want to be able to use N-hexane as a solvent, and you want to be permitted for that, you have to be permitted ahead of time for that and meet all these, whether you reach that limit or not each month. The reporting requirements are initial notification, the notification of compliance status, annual compliance. You have deviation reports if you didn't follow any of your plans. You have to report on your startup, shutdown, and maintenance. And then you have to report immediately if you don't follow any of your plans. These are relatively straightforward, relatively simple to follow for a vegetable oil extraction plant for cottonseed oil mills. For record keeping, you have to keep basically these same records. You have to keep a compliance ratio that shows you stayed under that disappearance rate for hexane of usually half a gallon per ton of seed processed. Your SSM plan basically documents the procedures you'll go through during startup and shutdown to try and minimize your emissions. If you follow it during your normal operations or your SSM events, you're okay. If you deviate, you must notify the EPA. So something to keep in mind here is to go through your plans and make sure that there's something that you can follow and that you do normally follow. If you have deviations from that and they find out that you didn't report them, you likely get fined for it. Your compliance plan kind of does the same kind of things. It just basically allows your operation to follow all the rules, and usually what it's end up doing is actually keeping you to be more efficient in your operations. So these are kind of standard plans that a normal vegetable oil or a normal seed mill will follow on a daily basis. When you go over to a biodiesel plant, their emissions are much lower than a typical oil mill, and if they're located separately, their permitting levels are really pretty basic, and as well as all their compliance plans and all their monitoring requirements. A biodiesel plant outside of Houston use simple PBRs, about a process that didn't cost more than $5,000 in permit fees to permit a 90 million gallon per year plant. Their total VOC emissions from this were 10 tons per year, but you'll see their HAP emissions were about 5 tons per year. They weren't a major source. The only record keeping and monitoring that they had to do consistently was for their fugitive emissions from all their fittings because their synthetic organic chemical manufacturing industry, because of the glycerin production. So they had to monitor all that stuff on a basis, but that was really all the monitoring and reporting they had to do. Excuse me. The problem is when you combine the two, vegetable oil mill will always be a major source for HAP. When it's a major source for one HAP, you then have to follow your record keeping and reporting requirements for all your hazardous air pollutants on site. Typically, these hazardous air pollutants and these standards will use either your emissions level or what are you processing, what are you manufacturing to trigger this. Well, a biodiesel plant is also a synthetic organic manufacturing facility because biodiesel itself is considered a synthetic organic chemical. What it falls under, because there's not a requirement specifically for biodiesel, falls under the miscellaneous organic chemical manufacturing, or the MON. What this does is, all of a sudden, a biodiesel plant, which normally would only have to worry about their fugitive emissions, then has to keep track of all their emissions and meet all the control requirements for MON, even though the same biodiesel plant, if it were located elsewhere, wouldn't have to do this. So in this case, they have to control all their emissions from all their process vents greater than 98%, using some control devices greater than 95% for others. They have significantly expanded reporting requirements, they have expanded record keeping requirements, and basically you've taken a plant that normally would require almost no reporting to the TCEQ and other environmental agencies, and you've just made a huge record keeping operation. We've run into this problem actually where that 95 million or 90 million gallon per year plant had very little reporting operations. A seed mill put in a 3 million gallon biodiesel plant, didn't realize they had these reporting obligations, and they wound up in quite a bit of trouble with TCEQ because they hadn't done any reporting for about 3 years, even though they hadn't really run the plant. Because they started up and ran it once, they had to meet all these reporting requirements on a monthly basis to TCEQ, and they hadn't realized it. So the next question is, how do you avoid falling under these MON requirements? You don't actually have to have your biodiesel plant located a certain distance away from your facility. You have to think about this before you start construction of your biodiesel plant. What you want to do is make it a separate legal entity. Basically, you have a separate board of directors with this, and you have to make sure that the facility can actually operate independently from the oil mill. That could be something as simple as having a separate source for receiving your raw oils that you're going to process at the facility. In general, just to sum up, basically what I'm here to say is, if you're going to do some permitting, if you've got an air permit and you want to do some changes, please think about the air permits before you make those changes. It really makes the process a lot cheaper for you in the long run. Some sources that you can look at to find out what you need to do: you can contact whatever EPA region you're in. They're usually quite helpful. They don't ask too many questions if you've done some stuff and you want to find out what's applicable. They'll still work with you, and they're not just out there to find you. If you have some more specific questions, you can go to their webpage, or you can contact me at Trinity Consultants. I'm down in the Corpus Christi office with my supervisor, Mike Meister, who's done quite a bit of permitting in the ag facilities as well. At this point, if you have any questions, I'd be glad to take them. I've got about a minute and a half. If not, thank you very much.